welcome to Two Authors Talk Miracles. I am so excited because my friend and, you know, I was going to call her a colleague, but, and she's not a co-author, she is someone in the Hay House family with me that I have just started to get closer to. Anita Morjani is here with us today. And we'd love to have a conversation and share with you a bit of our journey and some of the biggest lessons we've learned. So Anita, welcome.
Thank you.
I'm so glad you're here.
So am I.
Yeah, in more ways than one.
Oh gosh, yes.
So how about if you just start a little bit for the people who might not know, could you tell us about your journey?
Sure. In fact, I didn't set out to be an author. On February 2nd of 2006, that should actually have been my last day of life. I was, if the doctors were right, I would have died on that day. I had end-stage cancer because I had lymphoma for 4 years. Wow. And it had spread throughout my body. And it started out with just one little a lump on my neck, but which was diagnosed as lymphoma. And over a period of 4 years, it metastasized and spread from the all around my neck. So it was from the base of my skull all the way down under my arms, my breasts, all the way down to my abdomen.
Wow.
And some of the tumors were the size of lemons. And by the end of 4 years, my body had stopped absorbing nutrition. So I weighed about 85 pounds. My lungs were filled with fluid. I was breathing with the aid of an oxygen tank. Because I'd stopped absorbing nutrition, my muscles had completely deteriorated, so I couldn't walk. I was in a wheelchair. And I had these open skin lesions where toxins were coming out of my body.
Yeah.
So on that day, though, I went into a coma on February the 2nd, 2006. And the doctors told my husband that these were my final hours and that I wouldn't be coming out of the coma because my organs had now shut down. But the thing is, there I was hanging by a thread between life and death. But I was actually aware. I was aware of something much greater. I was like in this state of clarity where I became aware of my purpose and why I had the cancer and so on.
Wow.
And in that state of clarity, I felt as though I had a choice as to whether to come back to my body or not. And at first, I didn't want to come back because my body was sick and dying. Mm-hmm. I had no reason to come back because in that state, it was just the most beautiful, amazing state where for the first time, all the pain was gone and I just felt so light and free.
Were you free of your body in that place?
I was free of my body.
Wow.
And I was free of all the pain and the suffering and the struggling.
Mm.
And yet I felt I had a choice to come back. And I thought, why would I come back? My family was suffering, taking care of me. Mm-hmm. I was suffering and in pain.
Like, I don't want to be a burden.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I just wanted to stay in that state of bliss. But it seemed in the next moment, it felt as though I understood why I had the cancer, and I understood that now that I knew this truth and the truth of who I really am, if I went back to my body, I would heal rapidly. And
amazing. Amazing.
So sure enough, I came out of the coma, and within 4 days, the tumor shrunk by about 60 to 70%. And I was moved out of the intensive care unit and into a regular room. And the doctors were taking tests and they did not know what to make of me. They could not believe it. Because as the tumors just continued to shrink, and I was telling my family, I'm going to be fine. They don't need to run any more tests. They don't need to give me the drugs anymore. But they were forcing me to have the tests and to have the drugs. And I remember that one day, like 3 weeks after this happened, 3 weeks after I came out of the coma, a doctor came into our room, actually three doctors together, looking really serious, you know, in their white coats. They came into my hospital room. My mother, my brother, my husband were there. And one of them said, you know, we have some disturbing news. So everybody, of course, my family looked really worried.
Like, alarmed.
Yeah, alarmed. And so we said, what is it? And the doctor said, that we can't, we've done all the tests, we've done the biopsies, we've done the lymph node, we've done the bone marrow biopsy. We can't find the cancer. So
I'm getting this vision of we poked and prodded her everywhere.
Yeah.
And we can't find, we don't know where it went.
Yeah. And you know, and they were so bewildered, they didn't even know what to write in my medical records.
Yeah.
So we said, why is that a problem if you can't, isn't that good news?
And, it's a miracle.
Yeah.
You know?
And that's what you and I would say.
Yeah.
But the doctor actually responded and said, no, because if we can't find the cancer, we don't know what drugs to give her. Mm-hmm. And it's not possible for mm-hmm. cancer to disappear like that. Mm-hmm. It's there somewhere. We just have to find it.
Unbelievable.
Yes.
You know, I'm so, like, there's part of me that I'm so on the page with you of there are miracles and they happen every day and I've witnessed them. And then I'm feeling for this physician because the way I was trained in medical school, like, we try to make sense of everything, right? And
yeah.
we have to be able to give an answer, and there has to be we have to be able to name something and put a drug to it, right? Or give it surgery or be able to take it out, right?
Yeah.
And there's a powerlessness that comes with not being able to make sense of something.
And I completely get that because I actually empathized with him because I have to say they were lovely people.
Yeah.
They were doing their best.
Yep.
They were very caring
mm-hmm.
and they just so wanted to help me.
Yep.
So this is not about them as people.
No.
But it's about the training.
It's about the training. You know, it's funny. Wow. Okay. So first of all, that whole story was a wow. And since then, have you just steadily improved?
Yes. So within 5 weeks, I was released from the hospital cancer-free. The doctor, by his own admission, said, I have no idea what to even write on your medical records.
Yep.
My records have been verified by other oncologists. And this happened to me in a hospital in Hong Kong.
Yep.
And an oncologist from the U.S. who heard my story even flew down to Hong Kong to study
wow.
my records.
Yeah.
And so since then, that was... that was in March 9th, 2006. So since then, I've been cancer-free.
So it was like February 2nd
yeah.
to March 9th.
Five weeks. Yes.
So unbelievable. There's one short story that I want to tell you that is nowhere on your level, but it's the thinking process in medicine, which is what I'm drawing upon. So I burned out in 2004. I was working, and I was so worried about not being a team player. So I would take on these 36-hour shifts. If there wasn't staff, I would do it. And I burned out, and I ended up seeing a psychiatrist who said to me, oh my goodness, we gotta help you start taking responsibility for your own self-care and not being so worried about what everybody thinks of you, that you would just work yourself through your own body. So he gave me a prescription for Prozac. Right? So he said, you're burned out. We're going to give you time off work. And here's your prescription for Prozac. So I know all the side effects of what some of these drugs do. And I believe in drugs for the right dose, for the right person, for the right ailment.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't just generically believe in them. Right? So I filled the prescription, took it home, and I put it in my drawer. And I thought to myself, I don't know what's going on here, but I don't think it's a Prozac deficiency. Right?
Yeah.
So 5 weeks go by and he's working with me every week, teaching me about how I don't have clear boundaries, how this just reminds me of, you know, growing up wanting to include everybody and wanting to help everybody. And that's why I'm a healer, right? Like, I'm a doctor because I want to help everybody. So I go back the fifth week to him and he says, wow, Neha, that Prozac is really working well. And I said, well, Doc, I didn't take the Prozac. I knew the side effects. I filled the prescription, but I thought I'd wait to see how our work together was going. And then if I needed it, I would take it. But I haven't taken any. And he had this horrified look on his face. I thought he'd be happy. And he said, well, if you're not on medications, I can't bill as a psychiatrist for seeing you. You'll have to find someone else to help you.
Wow.
That's how ingrained, right, this thinking is, which as a patient, as you were a patient, it's like, wait, but isn't this amazing?
Yeah, that's exactly how I felt.
Yeah.
I thought you should be happy for me.
Yeah, right? Unbelievable. And I'm sure, I mean, there's lots of different physicians for sure and philosophies of how they show up, right? Yeah. So I'm sure through that period you had many.
I've had many. And one of the things that has touched me is when I have physicians tell me that they've read my book and was moved by it and they recommend it to their patients.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's moved me. So it moves me to see people doing the work like what you're doing as well.
Thank you. I love it.
I love it because it just helps to change people's perspectives
yeah.
about medical conditions.
And even the thought that your book gives them so much hope, right? I mean, you're like a living miracle, right? So it's this space where healing someone on a physical level is one thing, but really what I believe is that there's so many levels on which we have to heal.
Yep.
And your example of like almost spiritually healing is what I would call it. Would you call it that?
I guess yes, I would. Because I felt that it was my spiritual self or my inner self that healed. And that's what really healed when I was in this other state, when I was in the coma state.
Yeah.
And then my body is just a reflection of my inner state.
Yeah, and you knew, you had this knowing like, oh, the body, oh, that'll get better.
Exactly.
Right?
I knew I was already healed and the body just had to catch up.
Okay, I have this idea. So I believe that somewhere we fall off track in our spiritual world. And I just mean like our connection to something bigger than ourselves.
Yes.
Right? And when that happens, we have all sorts of emotions and thoughts that start coming that are off track as well. Right? And then we start feeling worse. Mm-hmm. And in the end, my patients would show up in the emergency department or in the hospital with their physical body with an ailment, thinking that that was the first sign that they had gotten.
Exactly, yes.
So would you be open to me asking you the five questions called the awareness prescription that I used to ask each of my patients once I had medically stabilized them? Like the night before I'm discharging them.
Yeah.
I would ask them five questions, and I wonder what your answers would be to those questions.
I would love to hear your five questions. I'm intrigued.
Okay, so it's called the awareness prescription. And the first question is, why this? Why cancer that started in your neck and moved all over your body? Like, versus your left arm, right? Or something else happening. Like, why was it that?
My intuition tells me that it's to do with communication.
Mm.
So that's why the neck area.
Oh, lymph nodes,
lymph
too,
nodes
connecting all over.
So
okay.
It was, so my, and this is not something I thought about before. So it's something that I'm just, it's just coming as,
wow,
as I'm listening to your question. But what I'm feeling is it started from the neck because it was to do with communication. I wasn't communicating my truth.
Yep.
I was afraid of communicating my truth. I always suppressed it.
Yeah.
So I never spoke up, never spoke out. And the fact that it is the lymph node and spread all over the body, it's my whole sense of being, my beingness. It was my self-worth, my self-value, because your lymphatic system basically runs throughout your whole body, cleansing your body.
That's right.
So that's my
and
sense.
And defending you.
Defending me.
Right,
see,
your immune system. So there's this way, you're not speaking your truth, you're not showing up as who you are. So your communication starts breaking down right here. It's the communication all the way through your body. It's your ability to defend yourself.
Immune. That's
right?
A good one. Immune. Yeah. Defending myself. Yeah.
So question number two.
Yes.
Question number two is why now? So why on February 2nd, 2006, not 2 years before that, not 2 weeks later, why did it happen to you in that moment?
Wow. That's a good question.
Yeah. What was the wake up call you needed in that moment?
Now, I know that at that point, I let go of fighting.
Ah.
I completely let go of fighting my cancer, fighting to stay alive. It just seemed too painful. I remember that's the last thing that happened before I went into the coma. I felt death can't be worse than this.
Wow.
And I let go. I just completely let go.
So it's surrender.
Surrender.
And like in surrender, you found
everything. The gift, yes.
Yeah.
I found everything.
You found life. You found love. You found like all of it.
In
it
surrender,
helped.
I found life. Yeah.
Oh, I just got the chills.
Oh, good one.
So Third question. What signals might you have missed along the way?
Oh, I think there were quite a few.
Well, you can just name a few of them.
I was having a lot of allergies, mm-hmm. a lot of allergies to foods, a lot of problems with the mucous membrane, and sinus problems and things like that.
It's almost like when you start having lots of food sensitivities, there's almost like your body reacting against you.
Yes.
Right? Because you develop something called leaky gut.
Yes.
And then your body, food comes in, and it's kind of like this experience where your gut is not a strong barrier anymore. It's kind of a loose barrier. And food starts falling through there, and your immune system starts reacting against you, essentially.
Yes, I think that was already happening.
Mm.
And so because of all these allergies, I started researching the food I was eating, and then I became obsessive. Mm. I became fearful of everything I was eating.
So there's control.
Yes.
You went into a high level of control.
High level of control of everything I was putting into my body.
Yeah.
So even before I got cancer, I was vegan, but instead of getting stronger, I was actually getting weaker.
Wow. Yeah. Okay, question number four. What else in your life needed to be healed?
That's a powerful one. That's a good one. My love for myself, my self-worth, that was the biggest lesson for me. I realized that I had, in fact, never loved myself. I'd always believed that it was selfish to love myself. I'd always put myself last, treated myself like a doormat, always put others first. And that the cancer actually was the first time it gave me permission to take care of myself.
Wow.
And in that state, in the coma, I realized I didn't need the cancer to take care of myself.
Oh, I just got the chills again. And now, you're not hiding behind others or taking care of others. You're standing center stage. You're owning, you're sharing your story. You're like taking, like, it's almost like you've taken on your personal power. That's what it feels like as I'm hearing you.
Yes, that's what it feels like to me. I mean, now, and as we're speaking, I can feel, it felt like the cancer was, it was like my own immune system, my own body, my own energy turning against me.
It said, no more of this.
Yeah.
No more. The last and final question. If you could speak from the heart, what would you say?
I would say, first of all, to me, that I will never let myself down again. I will never treat myself like a doormat. Mm. And to everybody else, to our listeners, to our viewers, I would say, love yourself like your life depends on it, because it does.
I love that. Wow. So your book is a game changer. It's a game changer for not only individuals who need hope and want to heal on a different level, but also I love how it's impacting the medical profession. And I love your tenderness, your honesty, your realness. If this was what was hiding, I think your body needed to turn on you to get this out. It's just so beautiful.
Oh, gosh. Wow. You know, if doctors were like you and asked the questions like you do, I think illnesses would be reduced by drastically. Mm. Drastically.
Wow.
Yeah, I really do. Those were great questions. They really were.
The awareness prescription. And the other piece is it can even be used when you face a dilemma in your life. So you can say, why this? Why now? What signals have I missed? What else in my life needs to be healed? And if I spoke from the heart, what would I say?
Yeah.
So as you move into being you and taking up the space in the world that is yours, just make sure you can use it even when you're not physically ill.
That's true.
So I think what I would say to everybody watching is, Anita is such an inspiration to me. You are such an inspiration. And your book is, it's a path home. So I love that you're speaking more, and I love that you're taking that center stage. You're owning your power and your place in the world, and you're sharing your gifts with other people. It's amazing. So definitely look her up on AnitaMorjani.com and follow her on Facebook, and for sure, get this book. It's a great one. I'm getting my signed copy right now. So,
and I would tell everyone to get your book because, I mean, those were amazing questions. So thank you.
You're so welcome. And that's only the introduction to my book. So once you figure out the awareness prescription, you figure out where, what needs to be healed in your life, the rest of the book is how do you then go and have those conversations?
Yeah, I got to get a copy.
Well, you're going to get one before you leave. So thank you.
Thank you. That was really good. Thank you.
We're pretty good together. We're going to have fun.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Two authors talk miracles.